ultimately, the objective of the United States, get control of the oil and gas in Iran. That's the long-term play here. This has nothing to do about Iran trying to get nukes, which they haven't been. Terrorist attacks against Iran. We love these guys. So we moved them to Albania, protected them, started funding them, and then in 2012, finally, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama took them off the terrorist list. Meanwhile, they were carrying out assassinations of Iranians inside Iran. So that's why I said Iran gets this reputation for being this bad actor in the Middle East. Look in the damn mirror, America. We're the bad actor, not them. Because this is going to, this will expose the military weakness of the United States. It also will have drained a significant amount of our military materiel that could be used against China in a future engagement. It's going to worsen the economic problems for the United States, up its debt, so it's going to be less of an economic rival to Russia, China, and the whole BRICS movement.
Welcome, everybody, back to the show. It's me, just Steve Yang here with Natural Resource Stocks, where we mine for stories that matter. And today I'm joined by Larry C. Johnson, a former CIA analyst who worked in counterterrorism in the State Department. And as soon as the war in Iran broke out, one of the first people I reached out to was Larry C. Johnson. So, Larry, thanks for being here.
Hey, I wish I was here under other circumstances. We could be talking, hey, how can we make more money off of gold?
Well, Larry, lots to talk about. People hear about, freedom for Iranians, but given how the conflict has unfolded with U.S.-Israeli strikes, Tehran's retaliation, and all the other stuff that's been going on, I just need your take. What's going on here? Why Iran and why now?
Ultimately, the objective of the United States, get control of the oil and gas in Iran. That's the long-term play here. This has nothing to do about Iran trying to get nukes, which they haven't been. In fact, the one guy in Iran who for 37 years has prevented Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and he said it prevented it because he said it would be a sin against God. We killed that guy, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He was the one that said, "Hey, we can't build this. This would be a sin, haram," and that's who we kill. So, I mean, it's just it's ludicrous. The American people have been subjected to an unrelenting bit of propaganda about Iran. We were told Iran's the number one sponsor of terrorism in the world. Absolutely not true, and it's not my opinion. You can go to the State Department's annual report. It's called Country Reports on Terrorism. That was first published in 2004. Prior to that, the annual publication was called Patterns of Global Terrorism. And that first came out during my first year at the Counterterrorism Office at State. What it shows is over that period of time, more than 80% of terrorist incidents that cause fatalities are caused by Sunni extremist groups like Al Qaeda, ISIS, Al Nusra, Boko Haram, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the guy that's currently president of Syria, and we're backing him. Yeah, he was part of that illustrious Sunni extremists. Not a single one of those groups backed, funded, supported by Iran. Not a single one. In fact, Iran went into Syria back in 2012 to help Bashar Assad fight these Islamic extremists that we claim attacked us on 9/11. So it's just, it's simply, it's bizarre. We pretend that, with Iran, we've been minding our own business, sitting around trying to, fish or play cards, and those damn Iranians just come up and attack us for no reason. And we cite, the attack on the Marine barracks in Beirut, Lebanon, in October of 83. Number one, Iran didn't do that. The group that did it is called Amal. Anybody that looks up Amal, AMAL, will find out that Amal was created in 1972. Oh, that's 7 years before the Islamic Republic shows up. And Amal, it was a Shia group, that's true. but they had their own reason for blowing up the Marine barracks. And that was because they had relatives in the Bekaa Valley, and our destroyers, one of them was the New Jersey, I believe, were lobbing shells into the Bekaa Valley, killing Shia villagers in September. So, gee, when these people choose to retaliate for our actions, we act like we've, you know, we're like an Alzheimer's patient. I don't recall that, you know, that did. What did we do? Well, we did a lot. September of 1980, we encouraged the Jimmy Carter, Zbigniew Brzezinski. They were in the last few months of their presidency. Encouraged a guy named Saddam Hussein. Don't know if you've heard of him, fellow in Iraq, that he should attack Iran, which he did. And we promised him support, which we gave him, including the chemicals that were used to make the chemical weapons that attacked Iran. Now, out of that war, we helped Iraq kill over 300,000 Iranians. And then we sit back and wonder, why do they chant death to America? Well, maybe that has something to do with it.
Maybe.
Just throwing out a piece of speculation here. Or the fact that the CIA gathered up and began protecting a foreign terrorist organization by the name of MEK, Mujahideen al-Khalq. We found them in Iraq, hiding out from the Iranians because they'd been carrying out terrorists. But then the CIA said, hey, carry out terrorist attacks against Iran. We love these guys. So we moved them to Albania, protected them, started funding them. And then in 2012, finally, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama took them off the terrorist list. Meanwhile, they were carrying out assassinations of Iranians inside Iran. So that's why I said Iran gets this reputation for being this bad actor in the Middle East. Look in the damn mirror, America. We're the bad actor, not them.
So I remember when I was, first of all, I grew up as a kid during the Operation Desert Storm and Saddam Hussein and all that. And then as I get older, I learn about, you know, petrodollars and maybe we're not as clean as we think we are. And then, in school, I read Animal Farm. And
oh, yeah.
Talking about just kind of the propaganda that's out there. And, I, of course, I would apply that to the other guys, you know, just the Soviets. And the more I pay attention and be honest with myself and look in the mirror, like you're talking about, it's kind of appalling to see what we are capable of. And to understand just the narratives that go out there, it makes you wonder, what can we really believe? I mean, I don't know what's true.
Well, look at us right now. We basically are our principle is we can kill whoever we want, whenever we want. We don't have to ask permission. So the Constitution was set up in a particular fashion that the founders said, okay, if we're going to go to war, if we're going to put this nation in a war footing, then it better be done by the act of the people's representatives who say, you know what? We've been attacked. We need to retaliate. We're going to war. Instead, Trump just says, you can't tell me what to do. I'll do whatever the hell I want. Israel wants me to attack. Therefore, I'm going to. And he did. And the same with blowing up the boats in the Caribbean. There's a right way, a wrong way. There's a lawful way to do things and an unlawful way. And Trump is acting, frankly, in my view, there's no difference between his behavior and that of Adolf Hitler with respect to, Hitler went into Czechoslovakia. Hitler decided to attack Poland. And Poland hadn't done anything to Germany. So, in particular, in this case, as they've admitted, Iran wasn't getting ready to attack us. Now they're pushing this lie that, Iran tried to assassinate Donald Trump. That was a joint FBI-DEA information operation. And they used the informant in this. Okay, think about this. You ever been to Sri Lanka?
No.
But you've heard stories of Sri Lanka, right? And as well as Singapore. So, these guys were in Singapore. They get picked up selling a couple of kilos of heroin. Actually, it was more than a couple of kilos. It was a significant load.
Yeah.
Now, normally, as I recall, in Singapore, like they'll put you in jail for chewing gum. All right.
Yeah.
These guys got let out pretty quick. They didn't get a lifetime sentence at all. They didn't even get a month sentence. They got off quick. Why do you think that is? Could it be that they agreed to become cooperators with DEA? Absolutely. And the FBI, it turns out. So then they one of the guys is sent to Iran and gets work in the oil, one of the oil fields in Iran. Now, the way the storyline goes is that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard recruited this guy to carry out a hit, an assassination in New York City. And, the Iranians may be a lot of things, but they're not stupid. And that, they just let some guy who's an Afghan national waltz in, with despite being, having prior drug convictions,
Yeah.
and then work with them, and then all of a sudden become an asset of the IRGC. So this was all stage managed and played up to create a narrative that, oh yeah, Iran was trying to kill Trump. No, it wasn't. But as we've seen, the United States has been the one assassinating Iranians through the MEC, and now most recently with this missile strike that took out the Ayatollah Khamenei, the Minister of Defense, head of the IRGC. It's one, Trump has completely. He's done the 180 from his vows in 2016 when he talked about the stupidity of going to war in Iraq and that he's going to stop wars. He's not going to start them. To now, getting us into a war that is it is going to destroy his economy. And we're already seeing that. Gasoline prices up 34 cents in 1 week right now. Unemployment numbers going up, not down. Price of oil up over $90 now. And so here, remember our policy? We were going to weaken Russia by, get the price of oil so low and countries can't buy it. Now we got Scott Bessent, who was 3 weeks ago was telling India, you better not be buying any of that Russian oil. He's now saying, yeah, it's okay, go ahead and buy it. Yeah, you just gotta keep the economy going. And the Indians are sitting there going, what? One minute you tell us not to, the next minute you tell us to do so. And here are the Russians. They're looking back saying, you know what? This Donald Trump's not such a bad guy after all. Because, our budget numbers are pegged to a $59 a barrel oil. Hey, we're selling it at $85 a barrel right now. Woohoo! They've already got one of the lowest debt to GDP ratios in the world. It's like 17%. This war is benefiting them financially. And the notion that, oh, it's hurt China because China no longer has access to Saudi Arabian oil. That's why they're buddies with Russia. Russia said, hey, need some more oil? Have at it. So the ones who are being destroyed in this are these Gulf Cooperating Council states, particularly Qatar and United Arab Emirates. They're taking it in the shorts. Anybody that invested in vacation property there or saw this as a great vacation destiny, right now with the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, I think they've got a 10-day supply of fresh food left in Dubai.
Wow.
And they don't have an easy way to resupply. And you can't fly in enough airplane, one of the airplanes aren't flying in because it's too dangerous.
So I have to ask you, first of all, a couple questions. One, you mentioned Hitler. And it made me think about, Congress and, limiting, absolute power, corrupts absolutely sort of thing. But, Congress hasn't formally approved this war. It is not exactly putting a stop on it either. So, if you can tell me about just kind of where Congress really stands with it, and how much support does the Trump administration have, and what does that tell you about the state of our democracy?
Well, yeah, our democracy is dead. Trump, this is one of the stupidest decisions Trump could have made because since he went into this war without the approval of Congress, when it goes bad, and it will go bad, it will. He's the only one. He carries the whole blame. He can try to blame it on Pete Hegseth, but to see the advantage is if you go to Congress and they approve it, then you say, hey, I'm just asking on congressional authority. They told me to do it.
Yeah.
You've at least have an out. He didn't even leave himself an out on this. He is totally exposed. He doesn't have any international authorization and certainly no domestic political authorization to do this.
Yeah.
And yet he just said, I can do it because he thinks he's the Wizard of Oz, the great and powerful.
Yeah, I'm also concerned about the fallout with our allies. I mean, it's one thing to go against Iran, which that's what we're talking about. But also, you know, the strained relationships with our allies. I mean, does this potentially weaken U.S. influence and maybe give rivals like Russia, China an opening here?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you're seeing that already with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and United Arab Emirates. Lesser extent with Kuwait, Bahrain, but they're all saying, you know, Trump hit us up for $1 trillion, basically, to support his board of peace. And as soon as we sign it, he starts a war.
Without anyone's
he
approval.
He starts a war. Yeah, without even consulting with us. And now, you know, Qatar, the economic damage being done to Qatar is really enormous. And number one, they are the largest third largest producer of liquid natural gas, so that's now shut down, and so all of those contracts that were supposed to be fulfilled ain't getting fulfilled, and I think you know covering if you cover the natural gas industry, what Qatar would be loading up on a ship today, that had been contracted for 6 months a year ago. That's not like somebody just called him up and said, hey, I got any gas today? Can I just, you know, send my son over with a can and we'll fill up? No.
Yeah.
So that's going to shut down deliveries that people from, you know, 6 months ago were expecting to be fulfilled this week and next week and the week after. And then once it's shut down, it's going to take about a month for it to get restarted. Let's say the war ends tomorrow. It's not going to be back up and running as it's supposed to be in a month. Then they are the biggest aluminum smelter.
Yeah.
That's been shut down. And I don't know who was the biggest recipient of their aluminum product, but that would be additional research to figure out whoever that company or companies are, they're in trouble because now, even if they get started, like I said, the war ends tomorrow, they get started. They said it's going to take a year for it to get back into operation. 1 year. So this is, this is going to have some economic reverberations, negative, for quite some time. And so they are both Saudis, and they're all talking about offloading U.S. treasuries. And who are they going to turn to? China and Russia.
So I want to ask you about Donald Trump operating this way without, you know, consulting, without approval, without the backing. You know, you don't do that unless either you really want something, you think you know better. I'm having a hard time understanding, like, what's the motivation here? Like, I remember, you know, I told my wife I was going to get the NBA Jam arcade game and whatever to put in our basement. I didn't tell her about it because I knew that she would say no. Is it simply one of those things? Or is there an underlying reason for why he's pushing this so badly when I would assume he knows it's going to hurt him if it goes badly?
Well, let's go with your NBA Jam. You do that. You do that, but let's understand your situation is you're in tremendous debt, on the verge of filing bankruptcy, and now you're spending money to buy that.
Okay? Exactly.
So, which would give good reason for your wife to be pissed at you. You'd have to sleep, you know, sleep with one eye open at night. You know,
I ended up returning it, but like, why does he, is he just like, is he trigger happy? Like, I'm just going to do this because I need the oil. Is he doing this because he's power? What is it? Like,
Yeah, he's primarily doing it because he's being told by the wife of Sheldon Adelson, gave him $250 million. You got to do this. He's being told by his Zionist backers, you got to do this. And at the same time, they flatter him and tell him that, you know, you're gonna do something so historic and it'll go down in history. Yeah, and that's true, but not in a good way. Not in a good way. You know, this be like the Hindenburg went down in history, and you know, that iconic image of it on fire crashing into an airfield in New Jersey. Trump, I think, is a combination of he's got early signs of dementia. He's notorious for confabulation. Confabulation is when you're lying or you're saying something that's not true, but you really think it's true. You know,
you convince yourself.
It's not that he's trying to deceive somebody. It's that he really believes it's true. And, you know, when you talk about, oh, yeah, Iran's killed thousands, millions of Americans. Well, you know, look up the numbers. If you take all the IEDs, these what they call explosively formed projectiles, EFPs, from our time in Iraq, they were fired by Shia militia against us. Now, number one, it's not terror. When you've got insurgents attacking American troops, sorry, that's called war. All right, because troops get to wear uniforms, carry guns, and shoot back. They're not civilians. So, but even in a wartime environment, the total number of deaths attributed to that, and again, it wasn't Iran calling the shots, but they said, hey, Iran's responsible because they trained him. Okay, I'll go with that. 663. Now, that's a far cry from tens of thousands. And, you know, if that was, you know, one of your loved ones, sure, a terrible loss. But in the scale of things, I think that many people get killed in 1 month in traffic accidents in New Jersey. So, you know, we got to put it in perspective. So Trump, the problem is he is so insecure. You think a guy that has had the financial success that he's had in life would be a little bit more self-confident and not, you know, have such a need to be told he's great and wonderful. But people I know that have met with him on several occasions, and we're not talking with a big group, we're talking small group interactions, said that he's like suffering the trauma of a kid who in elementary school always got picked last for basketball or baseball, always felt left out. That's sort of him. Even though he was, you know, as a teenager, he was apparently a pretty good athlete. But that insecurity is his overriding trait, and so now he's in a situation where he's gonna be embarrassed and isolated, because you're gonna find that these countries are gonna start walking away from us. Particularly, the longer this war goes on, and the less they keep hearing about, oh, we're shooting all these down and we've destroyed all this, you know, we've been through this before with the U.S. military. You're way too young to remember, but I am old enough that during the Vietnam War in 1968, so I was 13 back then, there was the big split between the CIA and the Department of Defense. The head of it at the time was a guy named McNamara, and the CIA analysts, the manager that was in charge of the analysts, a guy named Sam Adams was the analyst. The guy in charge was named George Allen, not the former football coach of the Redskins, but the different George Allen. Their analysis was saying, hey, despite the Pentagon, the commander in South Vietnam claiming that they've killed all these Viet Cong and all these North Vietnamese, and their numbers are shrinking, they're weak, they can't fight. Sam Adams was telling his boss, hey, boss, no, that's wrong. We barely laid a glove on them. And so it was a big fight. And they came under pressure trying to suppress the CIA analysis. And then, I guess this was in 67. So then in January of 68, this little thing called the Vietnamese New Year, Tet, all of a sudden, the Viet Cong rose up with the North Vietnamese and attacked the entire breadth of the nation of southern Vietnam. took over the U.S. embassy temporarily. I mean, it was a real black eye. That's sort of what we're going through now is Trump, whether by his own decisions or a combination of collusion with between the intelligence agencies, the military, they're being told a lie. And the lie is that Iran is weak. Iran can easily be toppled. All we got to do is put a little pressure, and it's cakewalk. We're going to sweep in, sweep out. And it's turning out that's not true.
Larry, I want to come back to that part. I do want to ask you about what you mentioned about the war, Israel. I spoke with Doug Casey today, and he was talking about how we're treating Israel like they're our BFF, and they're not our 51st state. And I'm curious as to where you see U.S. and Israeli goals aligning here. I mean, where do they align? Where do they diverge? What does it tell us about what's happening in the Middle East here?
Now, we have no goals. Our goal is to serve Israel, and Israel gets to call the shots. And it's a combination. This isn't a Jewish thing. This is, I call it, the Zionist thing, because that covers, we've got Christian Zionists like Mike Huckabee, that if you've watched him, his recent his disastrous interview with Tucker Carlson. But it's all intertwined with this belief about the last days. So the Christian Zionists believe that we got to have this war, Armageddon, in order that Jesus will return. The Jews want the war, this end of war, so that the Messiah will return. And that's not Jesus. They don't accept Jesus as the Messiah. It's got to be some other guy. And the Muslims have their own version of Jesus and coming back with the prophet Muhammad. So they respect Jesus as a prophet, just not as important as Muhammad. So, you've got all this religious undercurrent flowing around this to put meaning into why we're doing this. The Zionists believe that the God gave them this land from the Nile River to the Euphrates, which includes Lebanon, parts of Syria, Iraq, parts of Saudi Arabia. That, hey, God gave this to us. We're going to take it. The Christian Zionists don't necessarily agree with that, but they see this conflict that results from it as, hey, we've got to have that so Jesus returns.
Larry, how does that
And
explain the 51st state or Israel being our BFF and Israel calling the shots and the U.S. doing whatever you're suggesting that Israel says it does?
yeah, well, look at the money that AIPAC and others put into Congress. Representative Thomas Massie was the first one to sort of expose this. He said the AIPAC and the whole Israeli lobby, they try to basically give you a minder, somebody to shadow you and offer you money to help your campaign. And so many members of Congress take it. And once you take that money, you're obligated, you're compromised. So this goes beyond Israel being our very, very best friend. A lot of it stems, in my generation. So go back to 1960, 61. There was a movie called Exodus. It was starring Paul Newman, and then a number of other notable actors. And it was all the story of the birth of Israel. Oh my God. It was based upon the novel by Leon Uris. But that shaped the narrative for my generation. And the narrative was this: here's poor little Israel, virtually indefenseless, fighting against impossible odds, against these evil, nasty Arabs. And how do we know they were evil, evil and nasty? Because at the end of the movie, this one Danish girl, Karen, a beautiful little blonde, she's raped and murdered by those Arabs. And the last scene you see is the Paul Newman grabbing a rifle, and they're putting a rock on her grave and then marching off to fight the Arabs. So, we grew up conditioned to think that way. Nobody ever said, do you realize actually all those Arabs had actually lived there before any of these European Jews showed up, claimed it was their land, and that the rights of those Palestinians were completely denied? No. That, I mean, if you ever tried to raise that, as has been the case today, labeled an anti-Semite. Tucker asked Mike Huckabee a remarkable question, and Huckabee didn't realize it, or he pointed it out. He said, "You realize that who can go to Israel? Well, you've got to be Jewish. And that includes if you're a convert to Judaism, then you've got a right to return. However, if you are genetically Jewish, were raised, going to synagogue, keeping all kosher, etc., and you convert to Christianity, Israel will not allow you into the country. You don't have a right to return." So this really isn't about Jewish. It's about a particular kind of religious belief. It's not about ethnic identity. And so we're trapped into this. And yet the danger now for Israel is, and it's particularly underscored by what's going on with the war with Iran, more and more Americans are saying, "Hey, we're tired of being led around by the nose by Israel." In fact, you saw both, you had this week, Donald Trump and Marco Rubio said, "Yeah, we had to strike Iran. We had to attack because if we didn't, Israel was going to go first and then we'd be vulnerable. So we had to hit first." What? Are you kidding me? That's why we went to war, because we're afraid Israel is going to throw the first punch. No, we wanted to throw the first punch. Oh, that makes sense.
Larry, last time I had you on, we're talking about Venezuela. We're talking about Greenland, and we saw that the importance of asking who's actually, looking, who's standing to benefit, and regardless of the media narrative, who's going to benefit from this.
Yeah.
So, applying that same lens here to the conflict in Iran, I want to ask you, who stands to benefit most from this war?
Russia and Iran and China to a lesser extent.
Tell me more.
Because this is going to, this will expose the military weakness of the United States. It also will have drained a significant amount of our military material that could be used against China in a future engagement. It's going to worsen the economic problems for the United States, up its debt, so it's going to be less of an economic rival to Russia, China, and the whole BRICS movement. The United States does not have the military capability to, quote, destroy Iran. I mean, hell, we couldn't take care of the Taliban in Afghanistan for 20 years.
Yeah.
Iran's got an actual military and an actual structure and an actual culture that extends, they see things in terms of millennium, not just centuries, millennium. They stout themselves as a 5,000-year-old culture. So this was a decision made on bad information. Trump was convinced that 80% of the Iranians opposed the mullahs, that all we had to do, if we decapitate the top, the masses will rise up and throw them out. Well, it was just the opposite. I presume you were a youngster when 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you recall the kind of divisions that existed, political divisions that existed at that time. Democrats are still royally pissed off at the Republicans because they viewed that George W. Bush had stolen the election from Albert Gore. But then 9/11 happened. And on September 12th, everybody was proud to be an American. Those partisan differences disappeared, at least for a while. And it wasn't until really Bush invaded Iraq under false pretenses in March of 2003 that those partisan divide began to reemerge. Well, that's exactly what's happened now in Iran. They've been attacked just like the Japanese did to us on December 7th, 1941. And it's created outrage. It's inspired patriotism. And the people aren't blaming the Ayatollah. They're blaming America. They're blaming the West. And so it's just now, and this is taking hold particularly of the people in their 20s and 30s. Because frankly, if you're under the age of 50, you don't have a very vivid memory of what it was like when Iran was attacked by Iraq back in 1980 through 1989. That's sort of viewed as ancient history. This now is real. This is the first time in their life that they've seen this attack out of nowhere that's killing children, killed those 160, at least 165 girls, ages 6 to 12. And today, the New York Times reports that the Pentagon investigation has concluded that was an American missile that did that. We've killed children. And, you know, the even in the recent riots, the allegations that the Ayatollah police had killed 30,000 Iranians, none of them were children. Now, and that number is off. It's not a real number anyway. But the point is, this isolates America. It damages our reputation. And, you know, Ronald Reagan always talked about America as a city on the hill, a light to the world. He's quoting Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah out of the Old Testament, but that we were to be this beacon to the world of justice and democracy and freedom of speech. Now the image is coming across as we're the one that kill children. We're the ones who protect pedophiles. We're the ones that attack nations that haven't attacked us. Not necessarily a good reputation to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's you can see why a lot of people don't like America. And I'm curious, you mentioned Hitler earlier. Is like, do people see America in that same light?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Hitler is an overused meme. I acknowledge that. But you have to step back and say, who's one of the last people in modern history in the last 100 years that has attacked a country that didn't attack it on false pretenses?
False pretenses is that we're planted.
Yeah. Well, you could say Saddam Hussein's attack on Kuwait back in 1990, that, you know, August of 90, that was on par with that, except Saddam was meeting with the U.S. ambassador, what was her name, April something or other, and he asked her directly, because Kuwait was stealing Iraqi oil. You know, they're drilling sideways and into Iraqi territory, and he said, "Hey, we're gonna put an end to this. Do you have any objection? If is the United States going to oppose us if we do this?" And April said, "No, the United States doesn't have a position on that." And Saddam goes, "Okay, cool." And then they launched the operation, and we got pissed. "Hey, what are you doing?" And Saddam's going, "I asked your permission, and you said yes. We didn't say no." So, you know, that's where the dealing with the United States on the foreign policy front is like trying to get a history lesson from an Alzheimer's patient. Okay. You're never sure what you're going to get. It will actually absolutely be contradictory. You know, because, for example, we like to complain that Iran is this brutal, authoritarian state where they're executing people right and left. Okay, so which country, it's like a trivia test, Steve, which country in the Middle East has held more public executions than all the other countries? Tick tock, tick tock, tick. Oh, that would be Saudi Arabia. Yeah, we got no problem with the Saudis. Why? They're giving us $1 trillion. When they give you that amount of money, hey, what's a few chopped heads, you know? They probably deserved it.
But nobody talks about that, right?
Oh, no, heavens no.
So I want to talk to you about just, you know, Trump is thinking that this war is going to be easily, you know, this can be a quick win. The thing's going to topple over really quick. Are people buying that now? Where does Congress stand? Does Trump have the support of Congress? And what power does Congress think it has? Because they haven't formally approved the war, but they haven't stopped it either. So what does that tell you about in terms of what Congress will do, should do? I mean, are they scared of the ramifications here? What's going on here?
Let's start off with the stating it's a complete mess. So And there's an element of there are a number of Republicans that at least early on were buying into, yeah, this is going to be a short war. We got to back Trump. The Iranians are bad. They're evil. We got to get rid of them. There were some Democrats who were too afraid to they were afraid to stand up and strongly oppose Trump right at the outset because they say, well, wonder if he's right. And they defeat Iran, take care of Iran, just like they did Venezuela. Then we don't want to look bad. So they held off for a little bit. Well, okay, now it's starting to shake out differently. With each passing day and the failure to achieve victory, the Republicans are going to get more and more nervous because this promise of an early victory is slipping away. The Democrats, meanwhile, are starting to they're starting to get some steel in their spine. And Elizabeth Warren came out the other day and said, she said, you don't know how bad it is right now how badly the situation is going for the United States. The lack of clear goals, the lack of a clear objective and plan. So you're going to see more and more Democrats come out in opposition, but they're going to let Trump hang. They're not going to step in to intervene to say, hey, Congress needs to assert itself and we're going to get you out of this. No, because they don't want to run the risk that just in the off chance that those Iranians come back and do something hideous, which, they won't, but the Democrats don't want to be blamed. But if it's going south and they can see it, just watch Trump go up in flames. They'll dance around his flaming corpse. So, yeah, the Congress right now, they're just going to stand and watch as opposed to there'll be some cheerleading, but no intervention on their part.
So what I hear you saying is that everyone's just going to be doing what's best for them.
think of the Titanic going down. I'd say 99% of the passengers were not sitting there going, who needs help? Can I help somebody here? Does anybody need assistance? Save yourself.
All right. So Larry, I need to know how this ends. I mean, we talked about this war maybe seemingly going longer than Trump had anticipated. Does this conflict, fizzle out slowly? Are we in it for the long haul? I don't see someone like Trump admitting he was wrong. So where does this escalate really quick? Does it fizzle out? Where is this headed?
The economic disaster. This is going to get resolved, not with force, but because of the economic damage done is Europe's going to be paying, $150 a barrel for oil by the end of next week, maybe. Could go up that quick. It's already up to 90.
Yeah.
So that's 30 bucks in 5 days. The economic pressure that's going to build, particularly for Qatar and United Arab Emirates, with the flow of ships cut off, because Iran's position is going to be, this is staying closed until the West lifts the economic sanctions that it's been punishing us with, that have been inflicting death and destruction on our people slowly. We're not going to reopen the straits until those restrictions are lifted. And the U.S. military has got to back the hell out of the Gulf. Now, I don't see the Gulfies actually at this point eager to have the Americans stay in there with their bases. I think they'll say, you know what, guys, leave. Nice knowing you, but we're not going to continue this. So I think this will continue to escalate on the part of Iran, deteriorate on the part of the United States. You cannot rule out that Donald Trump is going to try to send ground troops in as soon as a couple of weeks from now. So there's going to be it depends on how much political pressure is really brought, not only on Trump, but his wealthy Zionist backers. Once they start seeing their own bottom line hurt and hurt bad, they're going to start saying, okay, wait a second, this has gone too far, or we were lied to. They're going to say, oh, you lied to us. You told us this would be quick and easy. And so then at that point, the blame game starts, you know, to say, who's responsible for this? And the finger pointing would be going wild.
Larry, can you tell us where you to find your work and your socials and how people can follow your work?
I'm at sonar21.com, S-O-N-A-R-21.com. Stands for Son of the New American Revolution, 21st Century. And I base that on the fact that I have 28 ancestors who fought in the American Revolution back in 1776, 1778. So, you know, I do love America, at least the concept of America. But man, I hate what we're doing right now. We are desecrating the legacy of my forefathers and foremothers.
Well, Larry, thank you for your thoughts and your sharing again your time. But lots going on, and I appreciate your insights and telling us what Larry thinks is going on. And buckle up, everybody. Be safe. Stay smart. Stay curious. Stay disciplined. Again, just Steve Yang here, learning alongside you from people smarter than me, like Larry Johnson. Larry, thanks again for your time.
Hey, Steve. Always enjoyed the conversation. Look forward to the next one.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, my friend.
Let's hope we have good news next time.
Buckle up.